Hi there, this is Darren Krause, editor at LiveWireCalgary.com and co-host of the Ward Zero podcast. It's our first podcast, and there's already a preemptive editor's note. This podcast was recorded just a few days before Mayor Nenshi made the announcement about not running for re-election in October. This episode does talk about the mayor, but he hadn't decided on his political future at this point. Be sure to tune in to our next episode, where we are pretty sure that we'll dive into Mayor Nenshi's time in office. Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoy the listen.
This is the Ward Zero podcast. We're informing you on Calgary's upcoming municipal election.
Welcome to the Ward Zero, a podcast where we're going to keep tabs on Calgary's 2021 municipal election. I'm Darren Krause, editor at LiveWireCalgary.com, and I cover City Hall and civic issues here in the city. It's also my fifth municipal election as a journalist. It almost makes me cringe to say that, but I do have a bit of history covering these civic votes. But it's exciting to have two partners in this journey towards the October 18th election, but I will let them introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Esmahan Razavi. I am a self-identified municipal politics junkie. I was a candidate in the past election in Ward 6. I co-founded Ask Her, which encourages more women to run for municipal politics in Calgary. And I work at Champion Communications and PR.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Zhao. I've been a long time community activist and kind of City Hall observer for a long time. When I was a little baby, I guess, back in 2007, I did a run for the mayoral seat in Calgary, and I've been observing Calgary politics ever since.
Jeremy, I do remember the coverage from the 2007 election. I just remember this one TV clip. It was really funny where you're trying to get some FaceTime there when I think then Mayor Dave Bronconier was talking, and you kept putting your face. It was almost like the intro to photo bombing way back in 2007.
Everything was so different back then. You know, the rise of social media just got started. You know, me being a little bit naive and a university student, I guess, kind of played into that as well. So it was a very different time compared to what we're facing now.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, as we mentioned, this podcast is about the municipal election. We're going to talk about a lot of things. We're going to cover a lot of the maybe not so talked about issues that are going on through the election. We're going to have guests. We are going to be talking about, of course, the popular issues as well. But maybe, Jeremy, why don't you start off? You know, what are you hoping to bring to this podcast? And what kind of things are you wanting to talk about?
I think observing Calgary politics for as long as I have, and then going through several organizations and participating with various community activists and organizers and leaders, there are some really hard questions that we have to answer and some issues that we have to face as a population. And really one of them is, I don't believe that Calgary is a great city that it portrays itself to be. There's a lot of cheerleading that I think needs to be tapered back. And we need to face some of these tough questions. And it could be anything from our budget, what we think ourselves as a city, how we grow into the future, what does the future generations think about the city that they want to live in and how that's all going to work out. I think these are some really big questions that we have to talk about and we kind of shy away from.
What about you, Esmahan?
Well, I think we just need to be having a conversation about what we want for Calgary's future. You know, I think we are at a crossroads. Calgary has had a really difficult time over the last few years, and we have an opportunity to either future-proof our city or put our heads in the sand. And this election, if we don't have the right people at the table, I'm worried we're going to put our heads in the sand and not set ourselves up for success. So I think it's a really important conversation to be having now, because there's so many issues that are going to play into the election. And if we don't kind of start interrogating candidates and figuring out where we need to go, then I am really worried.
For me, what I want to bring is a little bit of a different perspective to municipal politics. You know, media often gets criticized, and I mean, I've been guilty of it through my career, of focusing on the front runners and only talking about the issues that they're talking about. And for me, in starting this podcast, getting the two of you to join, I really wanted to start bringing different perspectives, different voices into the election picture, because we do talk about the same things, and it's almost predictable how election coverage is going to roll out. So hopefully through some of the experience that I've had with those past elections, I can kind of ward some of that past groupthink around elections off. Start with an interesting thing that you both have kind of touched on, is that we are at a really interesting juncture in Calgary's history. I've got a clip here of Mayor Nenshi talking about the fact that it is a critical election.
And when you think about all the forces that are coming to the city at the moment, whether it's climate change, economic transition, anti-racism, all of that, poverty, economic justice, all of these things together are going to hit all at once in a real tsunami of challenging decisions.
There's a lot of talk that given Calgary's current situation, whether it's the economy, the Green Line, tax shift, race, it's all critical in Calgary's history, and it's all come to a head at the same time. Is this the case? Do you think that this election is more important than any others in the past?
I don't think it's actually any different. There was huge discussions about the guidebook. When I more or less first observed Calgary politics, it was about Planet, which was the amalgamation of the Calgary Transportation Plan and the Municipal Development Plan. And have we really moved from passing those two documents since? I don't think so. You know, if we were so great at passing these two documents and we were so hopeful about actually changing how the city develops, you know, how we can curtail sprawl and all that fun stuff, we haven't really done anything with it. It's just been a document. We can heighten up the rhetoric about the guidebook, but is it really changed anything? Is it going to change anything? I don't think so. So that particular example to me is kind of a reflection of, we can pass all this great stuff, but we aren't actually implementing it or doing any of the things that we said we would go about doing.
I do think this is an especially important election, maybe even the most important one that we've had, at least since I moved to Calgary, which was like late 2010, early 2011. And I think it's because we have taken so many hits as a city, and some of the things that we relied on to carry us through are no longer there. And those things are coming home to roost. So I think we are presented with a juncture here where we can either, again, like sort of put our heads in the sand or work to build a better future for Calgary. And I think we have some candidates who are really interested in holding us back. And that really worries me, because, you know, Calgary, when we think about Calgary, we're not just thinking about us as a city, but we're also thinking about like the province as well. And I feel like the stuff that's been happening with the province has really been concerning to me. And if we have that kind of vision overtake city council here in Calgary as well, I just worry that it's going to take a long time for us to be the kind of city that young people want to live in, to be the kind of city that I optimistically think we can be.
So, I mean, there's a lot of things to unpack. And of course, that's what we're going to do over the course of this podcast. But what was really interesting to me about what Mayor Nenshi said was, we have And I hate to use the cliche, unprecedented seems to be used a lot lately, whether it's COVID or whether it's the economic situation. But we've also got big issues with things like the Green Line. It's as yet unresolved. We have the tax shift. And although there's a downtown strategy that's going to be coming forward, we're still a ways off of that. Last year, of course, we had the race situation, you know, the acknowledgement that Calgary is kind of plagued by systemic racism. With that lens in mind, is it any different now when you have that confluence of things than, say, Jeremy, when it was 2007 or perhaps in the 2010 or the 2013 elections?
You know, what's interesting is, and I think when Esmahan talked about kind of that perspective of, you know, what leaders do we want at city council? And, you know, Jeremy Farkas, you know, whether you like him or hate him, he is channeling a certain population where they've already gone through, and I've gone through it personally myself, just seeing people being let go, you know, across the island. I'm sure Darren, you being in the newsroom, you've seen that as well. You know, I work in the oil and gas sector. I've seen a lot of people get let go, and I've seen a lot of disheartened citizens who don't feel at times that their perspective or that their lifestyle or way of doing things is being reflected at times. And these are really tough questions. You know, I kind of straddle the line between, hey, I work in oil and gas, but I am fairly progressive as an individual myself. And there's all these conflicting emotions. How do we deal with that? And, you know, I always come back to, we need to have these conversations. They're going to be tough. We're not going to agree on everything, but we really need to talk about them.
I think, like, to touch on some of what Jeremy said, I mean, I just moved back from Vancouver a few months ago, and I was away from Calgary for about a year and a half. And even in that year and a half, like, I can feel the pessimism. It does, you know, more people have lost their jobs. We are dealing not just with a pandemic, but we had economic issues even before that happened, and they've been exacerbated by the pandemic. And so I think there is something to be said about people feeling hopeless and disenfranchised and really concerned and worried about the future of the city. But I genuinely believe, and it's the reason that I moved back, that we have the ingredients to build back and be better than we have been, but we need the right people at the table to do that. And part of that, I think, is I really want to be seeing in candidates a commitment to being honest to Calgarians, to having that tough conversation, to not taking the easy way out. Because if we do that, I am really concerned that we're going to find ourselves in a more hopeless situation.
I just want to ask you on that, because it has a potential to be a very touchy topic during this election. And that is, what is the right candidate? From my perspective, from the newsroom and trying to look at things relatively objectively, I think there's a real danger in having all of the same kind of thinkers on city council. And I think that there's a real value in having people who don't think the same as me and seeing the value in what they see the city as, because I think that that helps us take the blinders off and kind of see maybe some of those blind spots that we do have or we could have as a city. So is there a right candidate for the job?
I wrote in my notes that I don't see a lot of commentators or elected officials from the STEM community. And STEM, just for the audience, is like science, technology, you know, math, that kind of area. I don't see a lot of those individuals, and I'm not sure if it's just like the hesitancy that they want to be involved in politics or in being in the spotlight when it comes to community activism, but there's always that voice that's missing, and I don't see a lot of that makeup. I know it's a little bit different than perhaps what we wanted to talk about, but it was just an observation that I've seen over the years, and as an engineer, I just don't see those credentials come up as often when people are running.
Yeah, and I think to touch on that too, I mean, You know, we've had problems with representation on council for sure. You know, we don't have many women on council. We don't have an Indigenous council member. We don't have a Black council member. And I think those perspectives are ones that we need to see at the city. I think we also need to hear from younger voices, people who are looking to make Calgary their home for decades to come and who really have that long-term future lens applied in the way that they approach the city and the way that they approach policy. But more fundamentally than all of that, I think we need candidates who are going to be honest, who are not going to trade in misinformation, and who are willing to present a vision to Calgarians. I think there is an appetite for people to, you know, hold on to something that is a positive vision for us to move towards. And I think that could go a long way, but I am concerned that there's going to be, again, like that misinformation piece concerns me. I worry that this is sort of similarly to the way that we saw issues like the guidebook and the defund movement fall to misinformation. I worry that that's going to happen with this election as well.
You brought up an interesting point, Esmahan, about the youth. Edmonton has a youth council and they provide information and advice to their city council. The mayor does have a youth council here, but I don't think it's as active. Do you think that you know, in order to get that voice, obviously, I think you have to be 18 years of age in order to run, but do you think that something like that would help bring that voice to Calgary City Council?
Yeah, I think so. I think even more fundamentally, I think we see a lot of discussion about youth, but I don't think we hear from a lot of youth. So I think I want to see candidates who are younger. I want to see more commentators in the media who are younger, who are talking, like, I don't want to hear people talking about what it means for youth to stay in the city. I want to hear from youth about why they want to stay in the city. What would make Calgary still attractive to them? What kind of opportunities need to exist? What kind of amenities? What does just living in a city mean to them? And I think those are voices that are critical. So yeah, I think the youth council is important, but I want to really hear from youth before October.
Just kind of riffing off the original audio clip, Mayor Nenshi, here's another clip of him saying what he thinks the next mayor needs to be.
Oh, I suspect there's going to be a lot more people running for office, and I suspect that the people who are running for office still have a ton of time to define themselves. And I think citizens need to help them define themselves. This is a difficult moment. Even though I'm confident that even though today things look very grim, by October things are going to look very positive.
Right.
And I'm very confident of that. But despite that, once we get our vaccines, once we get into the post-pandemic recovery, things are going to look great for Calgary. But despite that, I think that citizens really will want to elect someone who can meet this moment. It's a hard moment. It's not a moment for a hail fellow well-met, I like to cut ribbons kind of mayor. It's not a moment for a super divisive mayor. It's not a moment for a mayor who just wants to shrink and hope that the world will notice us while we shrink. You know, it's time for people who want to take bold action, regardless of what that action is. And I hope that the mayoral candidates will all, and the city council candidates, because the council will be more important than the mayor this time. For the first time in history, we will have, by math, we will probably have a majority of council flip over because there's seven people who are either not running or running for mayor now.
Right.
If my counting is right.
Right.
And eight is a majority. So, we really have to pay attention to the city council thing as well.
So in that clip, of course, the mayor said that he thinks somebody needs to rise to the moment. Of course, going back to that idea that this is a critical election, do you think that there needs to be a different sort of mayor, somebody who can tackle all of these issues all at once? Or do we need somebody who's maybe a little bit more pragmatic and addresses specific issues one at a time so that, to Jeremy's point earlier, we do a lot of planning, but we don't do a lot of action, so that we actually take the action needed on some of these files?
I think those things don't need to be mutually exclusive. Like, I think we can have someone who is ready to meet the moment, but who does that in a way that is solutions driven. And I think one of the things that meeting the moment means to me is having a mayor who is willing to bring different voices together and who can make sure that council is working together. Because over the last 4 years, we have seen a really, really contentious council. And I think that that has driven the lack of progress in some important areas.
It's a tough question, Darren. When I look at it, and this is a perhaps a criticism of the incumbent right now, is that Mayor Nahed-Nenshi had a really tough time at certain points trying to build that collegial working environment with council. And obviously the council makeup changed between 2013, 2017, even versus when it was 2010 when he was first elected. So there's that aspect. And it doesn't matter if it's the incumbent or whoever is the next mayor. If you can't have a good working environment, it's very tough to work on things together to try and find common ground and to push forward with stuff. So there's that aspect of it that to me can be an issue. And we're seeing perhaps some of the front runners here. And we don't want them to fail or stumble along. We want them to succeed. But there's at times where you do have to put your differences, your ego aside to try and get certain things done. And perhaps that can get in the way at times. And I'm coming from the perspective of how you actually go about in the decision-making process. It's not all fun and games. Once you're elected, you have to work with the other 14 members on council and you don't see things eye to eye. It's going to be tough if you start off the race with a toxic working environment already.
I hesitate to label, but when we get into these sort of leadership positions, quite often as an organization or a city goes through a transition, you talk about whether you need a builder or whether you need a maintainer or whether you need an inspirer. With that in mind, what kind of a leader do you think we need in the after the upcoming municipal election?
Well, we definitely don't need a maintainer because there are a lot of issues that we need to address. I mean, I would like to see us have a builder and an inspirer. I want both of those things in one person. Maybe that's a lot on a wish list, but I think it's possible. And I think there are people like that in the city. We just need to see that happen. And I think that will happen if we, you know, the more we hear from candidates and the more we talk about what we want for our city.
I don't know, Darren. I feel like that's an acceptable answer. I don't really know what I want yet. I mean, obviously, I do want an individual that could inspire and could build great things for the city. But, you know, just perhaps it's just me, but over the decade, you know, you get more jaded and you get more pessimistic and you get more grumpy about certain things. So there's the reality, I guess, about how I see things are built and things are done at the city. And then there's kind of the aspirational aspects of city building. You know, if we go back to the Bronco era, the reason why Dave Bronconier was able to get the West LRT done, was able to get Planet passed, was because he was able to work with different counselors who had different opinions and perspectives on different things. And you didn't always get what you wanted, but you got some form of it passed. You know, his legacy will be that West LRT. The Green Line's been going on for, oh my goodness, however long, and we still can't wrap our heads around it. And the other point is that, you know, the city is a creature of the province, right? And it's so tied down and restricted constitutionally as to what it can do. A lot of times it's just the aspirational portions of it. And, you know, we want to do all these things, but in reality, in practical terms, it is very difficult to deliver on some of the things without either provincial intervention or some form of negotiation with the municipal affairs minister in order to get certain aspects of what you want done, or to be able to, you know, leverage more tax powers or have more say in certain things, or have a city charter. You know, all these things we've forgotten about because there's a unfortunate obstacle or reality as to what the city can do at the end of the day.
So just to add to what Jeremy said, I completely agree. Like, we need a collaborator as mayor. That is the number one or like at least in the top three, I think, attributes that need to be in a mayor that we have. And I know one of the current candidates kind of has made a reputation for himself as the lone vote for no. And that to me is not going to be leadership. Like, I don't want to see someone who takes pride in the antagonism. I want to see someone who is able to build relationships, bring us all together, and move us in a good direction. Because I think that's what we need at this point.
I think, I mean, just through some of the conversation so far and talking about that division, that polarization, and then through, you know, some of what you guys would like to see, I think for many Calgarians, and I can't profess to speak on behalf of all of them, but I think a lot of them are tired of that division. And so maybe we do want a combination, but I think one of the predominant sort of traits that I would like to see in the next mayor is that consensus building. Love him or hate him, Dave Brancagni was able to get things accomplished because he found a way to work with others. Yes, he had his battles with Dr. No, Rick McIver at the time, but at the end of the day, they were able to move things forward. And to Jeremy's point, we've been lacking that over the past several years. The mayor, he's a very vocal person. I think that he's in large part of that, he's one of the antagonists, I would say, but others on council have emerged as antagonists as well. And I think if we can kind of dial that back a little bit, I think the city is going to benefit in the long run.
I just go like, who would want to run as a candidate if it's just always antagonism, right? Like, we're human beings. We're not robots programmed to have such thick skin that we ignore, you know, all criticism. We are human beings at the end of the day. And I have to keep reminding myself of that, because, you know, it can be hard whether you agree or disagree with a certain candidate. They are still a human being with emotions. And we have to respect that, because when I ran in 2007, and maybe Esmahan can talk about her experience as well, you know, it was for the most part really good. You know, there wasn't all of this crap that we see in the news or on social media or even in person, what we see kind of in videos and in news reports and stuff like that. That wasn't the case back in 2007. So we have to really, even as citizens, kind of curtail back our own, I would say, way of conducting ourselves in public.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, when I ran, people were already, I think, feeling that the previous council was divisive, and they wanted to see a more collaborative council. That was at least my experience door knocking. But in the last 4 years, to me, it seems like the antagonism has only heightened. I think Jeremy is right. Like, there is a role that we have to play as citizens to be careful of that antagonism. But I also think leaders are responsible as well, and they set the tone. That's why it's something I'm looking towards. Like, what is that tone?
So I know that we've talked about the politicians being part of this. And Jeremy, you mentioned the citizens. You know, I think the media is in large part to blame. And I can only speak from my personal insight into the industry. And I think it's no secret to anyone today. Media has, although profited is a really difficult word to use because not many of them are significantly profiting these days, but media is targeting certain audiences and delivering certain content for certain audiences that they know will pay. So if people are consuming that content and that's a part of their daily routine, of course, it's just natural that we're going to start to see that reflected in the citizens. And I think to a large degree, media is a lot to blame for how, you know, as you put it, there was already talk, you know, back in when you were running, Esmahan, about the division on council, but yet it's gotten worse. And I think media organizations have really locked onto that and gone, oh, you know what, if we keep delivering these guys the red meat, whether it's progressive, whether it's conservative, then you know, we can get them to pay for that content. And it's been a really unfortunate degradation of the information that's out there. And I don't know, maybe I'm just painting with too wide a brush, but I think it's very much reflected in the citizenry and their thoughts on certain issues.
Yeah, and I think it is unfortunate because I know how hard like City Hall beat reporters work to get people the stories that we need to hear. But I think you're right, like there is like a larger kind of tone. I don't know whether it's like columnists and commentators who really kind of push these things that are divisive. It's discouraging to see because some of it is almost like manufactured issues, right? And this is where I think the misinformation that we are vulnerable to misinformation in this election. And this is where I, you know, go back to like the guidebook and the discussion around police funding last year. And that issue, those two issues were really torqued. And there were columns and commentators who were participants or instigators of that twerking, and it degrades our conversation because instead of having the conversations we could be having about issues in like a more, you know, rational, productive way, we are engaged in battles over issues that don't even exist.
Jeremy, final thought before we head into some of the top issues of the 2021 election?
Sure, this would be like my Jim Prentice moment where I say the citizens have responsibilities. You know, we could blame the media, we can blame everybody else, but we have to, kind of like what Esmahan was saying, we have to have constructive dialogue. We have to be able to critically think about what we read and what we see in the news. We have to stop being armchair activists and go out and actually participate in some of the things that we criticize about, because it's a lot harder doing those things than to sit back at home and be on your laptop and say, well, they're doing it wrong, or, you know, it doesn't go far enough. You try going out and, you know, organizing a forum or organizing a rally or doing something that you think will benefit the community. You're going to see a lot of roadblocks. And if you don't actually do those things as a citizen, you're not going to get anywhere.
All right, we are on to top issues of the 2021 election. In our show notes, I put together a list of, I think there's 12 here, in no particular order. I'm just going to fire them off here to start. Green Line, defund, or I guess we'll call it reallocation. Residential speeds, the downtown situation. Fluoride, which Jeremy has highlighted because he's not certain about its election relevancy. Female representation, it's really been boosted this election. Racism, after last year's systemic racism acknowledgement, ethnic undertones, or I guess racist undertones in sort of how we look at all of the issues that are coming up in Calgary. The overall economy, safety, and the city's long-term plan. And, you know, that's where the guidebook comes in. And of course, Calgary's changing demographics. Is there one of these issues that stands out more than another here for you guys?
I mean, for me, all of these issues kind of fall into what I think is the broader theme of this election, which is our future. And so many of the issues that you just brought up, Darren, are like kind of critical questions that play into how we see ourselves as a city, like with the Green Line. You know, are we a city that funds and supports and encourages public transportation? Are we a city for all Calgarians, regardless of their race or gender or sexual orientation or, you know, economic status? Are we a city that, again, young people want to stay in? Do we have jobs in sectors that are emerging? Are we thinking about how to make downtown more vibrant, how to have more complete communities, how to make it so that people can afford to live either in the inner city or a little further out and still be able to, you know, maybe take transit to work and have a community center nearby with a pool and have a school nearby? Like, these are the decisions that we have to be making when we talk about our broader future.
I I completely agree with Esmahan. I think the only thing, though, is that when we talk about all these issues and how Calgary is going to grow as a city into the future, there are those aspects. They're very important in the city building perspective. But in some of my circles, in the areas where I work, the concern is still the budget. It's still the economy. You know, that's still, at least in my experience, and I can only speak to my experience, those are the overriding concerns. Everything else is still taking a backseat right now. And so there's this conflict between resolving the short-term issues that we have, you know, whether it's the taxation downtown versus suburbs, but then there's also weighing on these long-term issues like racism, like women representation, and how do we build our transportation network for future generations and populations. We are playing this very difficult tug-of-war game, and I guess Calgarians are going to have to choose kind of what they need to do come October.
Just kind of exploring that a little bit more. I mean, obviously, the business, the economy, the downtown, you know, those sorts of things, that is very, very personal to people. When we start talking about the downtown situation as a plan, you know, this downtown strategy, or the Green Line as a plan, or how the city develops. And I've got so many thoughts on the big picture thinking of things like the guidebook. When we talk about my job and business and taxes and the city's budget, these are things that impact me directly. I can see it on my monthly tip donation to the city, I guess we'll call it, through property taxes. So I can see that. I can see the impact. Is there a disconnect between these issues and translating them for people in how this impacts them from a day-to-day perspective?
We sort of treat these issues as separate when they're all interconnected. And I think you're right, Darren, in the sense that we talk about those issues separately. And I think bread and butter issues, like putting food on your table, having a roof over your head, those are tangible. We all understand what that means, but they're interrelated to the other issues that you mentioned. If you live in Northern Calgary and you need to take transit to work, but you don't have reliable public transit, that affects your participation in the economy. If you are a person who is, you know, in your last few years of university, and you are not just thinking about what industry and job you can get into, but where you can afford to not have a car and not pay car insurance and all sorts of stuff like that, that's related to public transit too. If you are a member of a racialized community and you're seeing the kind of hate that we've seen in the last few weeks, that might make you uncomfortable and not want to participate here. So I do think we sort of maybe don't talk about them as we should, and we don't make the connection for people that these things are all interrelated.
No, Esmahan's absolutely right. And the other thing that kind of aggravates it is that we have these the ward system. It kind of sets the councillor up to defend their own fiefdom, I'll call it, even though when it comes to an issue that affects all of the city, they're able to vote the impact of how that law or legislation will impact everybody in the city, but they still have to represent their own ward. And so we have these artificial boundaries that we set up, and it pits the quote unquote suburban councillors against the more inner city urban councillors. And it doesn't necessarily translate to that holistic, you know, big picture approach that Esmahan was talking about as to how we resolve it as a city, not as a ward councillor. So there's that aspect as well.
There you heard it, folks. The Ward 15 councillor is advocating for a member at large system in the city. You know, if we are to separate out these issues, is there one that you think will become that real wedge issue in this election? Will it be something like how we're going to get the economy back on track? It seems like a really tired trope to me. I know that it's an issue, Jeremy, and I know it's an issue for a lot of people, but using it as a wedge issue seems like it might be a little bit overused. But what about something like the Green Line? We've already seen Councillor Farkas begin to put out surveys or whatever to talk about whether or not we should be taking more time. Obviously, the residential speeds became a real divisive issue at City Council as well. Is there anything here that sticks out to you guys? Is that one issue that we might be talking about too much? Or is there an issue that we're not talking about here that you think will manifest itself during the election?
Climate change. I mean, it whether we want to talk about it or not, it directly impacts how Calgary's economy is going to function in not just the short-term future, but long-term future. That wasn't in the show notes, and I don't think we talk about that enough. It's shaping everything that we do. It's shaping all of our conversations. It's shaping what types of jobs we're going to be producing in the future, what the future holds in terms of how we address everything. It's not talked about as often. I know it's not a constitutional thing for the city, but it's just so all interconnected, kind of like what Esma had. So everything's interconnected, and climate change for me, for some reason right now, it's just sticking out as one of those points that perhaps needs more dialogue.
I absolutely agree, Jeremy. I think you're right. Like, climate change, it's going to drive who we are, not just in terms of the economy, but how we build our city and whether or not we're building a city that is sort of future-proofed. So I think that's a great one. I think that's something that we need to really press candidates on.
I'm going to be the stick in the mud here, only because while climate change is a big issue, and I do think that every single one of these things, Drew Farrell has made a career out of asking, well, how does this apply to our climate change goals? But I'm not sure that the average Calgarian will see that in this election, unless it becomes a bigger issue. But I do think that something like the Green Line, or actually, I think the city's growth, we saw it during the guidebook, that there is a real polarization in that group that wants things to stay as they are, and that group that goes, hey, some things can stay as they are, but we've got to start changing so that we can meet goals that we set out through Planet, through the MDP, through Imagine Calgary. And right now, if we all dig our heels in the sand, that's not going to come through. I do believe that the guidebook actually, I have no inside information on this at this point, but I do think that the guidebook, there's going to be further delays, even though the councillors, despite their best effort, some of them to get it put through, I think there's going to be further delay tactics. And I think that there's going to be further public consultation that's going to be required. And therefore, I think it's going to become a big wedge issue during the election. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, I think we saw COVID has like ruined my sense of time, but I think a couple weeks ago that the guidebook is ripe for being a wedge issue. And I think it's, I don't want to say it's hard to predict what wedge issues are going to be. I think it's almost, you know, it's pretty clear and you kind of identified it a bit, Darren. But I think what's interesting to me is why those are wedge issues. And part of it, again, I think is because there is misinformation and there is a willingness to kind of over cater, I think, to voices in the city who don't want change. And that creates a sense of like parity between, you know, people who understand that like we need to build for the future and people who are more resistant to that. And I genuinely don't think that the conversation is as even or weighted in the direction of the non-change sort of attitudes as it's portrayed.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about wedge. If it's the top issue, then it kind of goes back to the theme of the future of the city. We're basically taking all these issues and we're going, which way do we want to go? I remember late 2000s, we'd always talk about, oh, Calgary being a world-class city, Calgary being a world-class city. Well, right now, what I'm seeing a lot of, at least in the news, at least what people are talking about, is that we still want to be that small town city, 700,000 people. We don't want to look to the future. And so all these quote unquote wedge issues that are adding up really comes down to what does the future look like? It's okay if we don't want to build the green line. It's okay, you know, if we don't want to progress on certain things. I see it differently personally, and it's going to be a decision that we have to make as a city. And, you know, if some of us disagree with it, some of us are going to move away, or we're going to keep fighting. Simple as that.
I mean, it's a perfect opportunity for us to talk about misinformation. It's been an issue, I'm going to just say, for at least the past 3.5 years. Is this going to be a problem in this election?
Yes, 100% yes. And I think, like you said, it's been a problem for the past 3.5 years. Again, we saw it with the guidebook. We saw it with the reallocation of police funds. And unfortunately, like, there are already mayoral candidates who are engaged in it. So it's going to be a huge issue. And I do worry that it's going to drive our conversation into areas and issues that ultimately don't connect to what we need to be talking about when we are talking about the future of the city. So yeah, I'm super concerned about it. I think we're already seeing it. I think it's only going to get worse. I really worry about what that means for what I would like to see, which is like the right people at the table building our future.
Sorry, just before we go on, I think we can... It's not like Jeremy Farkas's name is Voldemort, so
yeah,
we can say, because I mean I've called Jeremy out on it before about the fact that there are many things that he's maybe not entirely informing the public appropriately about. I think he's not the only one. I think there are a number of counselors who have used information to their advantage. I think he just gets quite a few more headlines than some of the others.
I think they all know what they're doing. I know exactly, not me, they know what strategy is going to win them votes or going to cause conversation. And there is concern. I do find it to be, sometimes it can be childish as well, but eventually it backfires. You can win this election. You can do all you can to win an election by spreading misinformation or twisting certain facts in your direction. But eventually it's going to backfire. And the victims are going to be the Calgarians that you really wanted to help and protect. And it's not going to do us any good. Having that upfront conversation, being wrong about certain things is okay. That's at least my personal opinion. You know, being able to admit when you're wrong, being able to admit when you make an honest mistake, I think in the long term, when we have these constructive dialogues and criticism, goes a long way in building a better society. So, you know, to preempt it with something that's non-factual, I think it just doesn't help in the long term, and it will hurt you as an individual.
In a recent interview, Drew Farrell told me that she believed the media bears a large part of the responsibility for not calling these folks out. Now, I know that we had talked about the media and their role, and Jeremy, you kind of said the citizens need to take some responsibility here too, but sometimes is the media guilty of just reporting what somebody says without actually going, whoa, hold up, wait a second, this is actually not the case? And are we sort of abdicating our responsibility to make sure that we are the purveyors of good, honest, accurate information?
Well, we don't want to pay for the news, so this is what we get. We don't want to be informed. We don't want to uphold you know, one of the pillars of democracy, which is, you know, objective, insightful news media and outlets. So if we don't want to pay for it and we're unwilling to do anything as citizens to better inform ourselves and to have a better quality news service, then this is what we get. I still defend my statement that some of that responsibility is on us as citizens. We can't keep pointing the fingers at everybody else being at fault for all of this bad stuff that's been happening. You have to, everybody's busy, you know, and we're always going to say, oh, our schedule's too busy doing this, doing that. Yeah, well, everybody's busy, too bad. You got to step up once in a while, go volunteer, do something, right?
Oh, that's a bit of a call to action there, Jeremy.
Oh my goodness.
Step up, volunteer. I love that. But on the media piece, I mean, I do think that there is a difference between presenting like two things as though they are both true and presenting something that is a fact and calling something out when it's not a fact. And I think that is something that I would like to see the media doing more of. And I think we sort of, you know, have seen, and I don't want to bring the, you know, US into this in any way, but we've kind of seen how rhetoric can deteriorate when you don't do that. But I do think we don't value the media as a pillar of democracy like we should. And so that is on us too, as citizens.
Great place to tie it up, guys. We are going to have more of these conversations. This is a good launch point. We're 6 months out and we're already talking about this stuff. Are you guys excited for the upcoming election?
Yes.
it's a slow drag every 3-4 years, so I guess so.
Well, we are going to make it exciting. I want to thank Jeremy Thau and Esmahan Razavi for talking with me. You're going to hear more from us as we continue to move forward towards the October 18th municipal election. Thanks very much for joining us. Mm-hmm.